Well, welcome back to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. Again, I thank all our listeners who contributed and are continuing to contribute throughout May to the fundraising drive. It's good for our morale, and we're very optimistic at CIUT. There's an event coming up. I want to make sure I tell you about this and that we remind you throughout the program. Meng Wen Zhou. There is a panel on the new status of her case, Meng Wen Zhou of Huawei, being held by Canada for now, 900 days is, I think, the way the Globe and Mail would put it, if they were to mention, in support of the U.S., a desire to see if they can destroy Huawei as a competitor, and it's a shameful business. So the Meng Wen Zhou panel will be May 20, that's Thursday, 7 p.m. And if you want to take that in, you go to Tinyul, tinyurl.com/ Meng panel. There's going to be a number of speakers. Christopher Black, a international lawyer who has been a guest on the Taylor Report on many occasions, is going to be part of that panel. 7 p.m. May 20, tinyurl.com/ Meng panel, 7 p.m. Thursday, May 20. And again, it's the Taylor Report. I'm going to be speaking now with Tony Leah. Tony Leah is the chairman of the Political Action Committee of Local 222 in Oshawa. Tony, welcome to the program.
I feel glad to be here.
You keep track of course, of the Unifor actions and strikes across the country. We have a rather large strike taking place in Toronto, Nestle's. Tell us about that.
Sure. The workers at the Nestle's plant in downtown Toronto have been on strike since May Day. There's 470 workers. This is May Day, yes. They went on strike on May Day. These are the workers that make Kit Kat and Aero and Smarties candies and candy bars for a Swiss multinational corporation, Nestle's, which is one of the largest food manufacturing companies in the world, maybe the largest, incredibly profitable corporation, and yet intent on trying to drive down the wages and working conditions of the workers that make all of those profits for them, which is why these workers are on strike.
You know, as soon as you say you listed the well-known candies, a chocolate crisis is, in our culture, not having your chocolate is a serious matter.
Are the ultimate of essential workers.
Yes, they had to put them at the head of the line to get their vaccination. So how many people are involved? What's the issue?
There's 470 workers that are on strike at the facility on Sterling Avenue in Toronto. Of course, one of the things that corporations like Nestle's,
Bloor Street.
Yes, yeah, near Bloor and the Danforth, or Bloor and Dundas, sorry. But one of the things that Nestle's and other corporations like that do is they have everybody divided up, so they have numerous factories all over the place, and they try to force them to be divided from each other and bargain separately. So this group of workers only bargains for the workers at this one plant. And that's one of the ways that the company exercises leverage over them. So the key issues are equal pay for equal work. Nestle has introduced a category of worker, which is basically like a contract worker, they call them supplemental employees who have no job security. They don't have any real seniority rights. They don't have guaranteed hours even. And they make approximately $10 an hour, less than the other workers in the plant, basically doing the same work, making the candy bars and the chocolate for Nestle's, but at $17 an hour.
Yeah, if I could interrupt you there, we're speaking to Tony Leah, the Critical Action Chair, Local 222, Oshawa. I thought this was kind of a fundamental matter with unions, not to allow that particular issue to come up. And this, I thought it was always a kind of a banner point to say equal pay, equal work. Certainly on the gender front, that's been a major battle. But it's kind of surprising, actually, that this could be an issue now, 2021.
It should be shocking, but it's not, because it's spreading like a cancer. Once one corporation gets away with it, then of course all of them line up at the trough to try to take advantage of the same thing. And unfortunately, some of the leaders of our labor movement have been slow to take on this challenge. And Unifor in particular, I believe, has been woefully inadequate, because they've allowed corporations like GM, for example, where I worked, to implement this divide and rule tactic 10 or 15 years ago, and have workers doing exactly the same job for vastly different pay, with unequal pensions, unequal benefits, and they've gotten away with it. And so, of course, it's spread, and GM was able to establish it before Nestle's in the Toronto plant anyway. And so I think that we're seeing the result of that, the failure to stop it when it started, means that it's spreading further and further.
That's true of there have been new contracts signed, right? Your plant is one of those odd stories where we wished you all goodbye and said no more GM, and then a hiatus period went by, and then, oh, hello, GM is back. And in the new contract, we still have the old problem, right?
Well, that's right. By Unifor negotiating a closure agreement for vehicle production in Oshawa at the end of 2019, one of the results or consequences, whether intended or unintended, is that almost everybody severed their ties with GM. And so a year later, GM announced that they're going to start building pickup trucks again in Oshawa, and they're going to be hiring 1,500 people to do that. And they'll be all new employees. So they'll be the second tier workers that make, $13 an hour less. They're doing the same work.
And they always say, well, they can catch up. How long would it take them to catch up to the others?
In Oshawa, it's 8 years.
Eight years.
In Nestle's, they currently have a significant number of these supplemental employees. And what they agreed in the last contract 4 years ago was that 10 per year would be promoted to full-time workers.
10?
10.
Did you say the workforce is 370?
470, but there's probably currently about 20% or so are of these second-tier workers. So all of they've been able to do for the last 4 years is get 10 per year moved up. And what is being proposed for the new contract, Nestle has offered to move people up when they get 8,000 hours, which would be 4 years if they worked full-time, 40 hours a week. But the workers there point out they don't get guaranteed hours. So many of them only get 1,000 hours a year. And so it would take them 8 years or more.
This is called moving the goalposts, right?
It's definitely moving the goalposts.
I mean, we're free to suspect that management is watching those hours too.
You know, it's such a destructive thing to agree to have a group of workers that don't have the same rights as other workers. Because not only are they paid less, but they don't have any real seniority rights. They're really second class citizens in every way. They have no guaranteed hours, no guaranteed seniority rights, no pension, almost no benefits, but they're doing the same work as the other people in that operation. How can a union agree to that? I mean, this is really the fundamental question. How did we get to the point where unions were willing to sign contracts enshrining the right of the corporations to abuse workers in this way? The only justification for it, I guess, that's presented is, well, we protected some of the rights of the other workers, you know, so it, at the expense of the people who are going to be hired in the future. And that doesn't work either, because it creates division and weakness, and eventually, you know, rights are taken away from everybody.
It is really like planting a bomb on your own feet from the union point of view, because inevitably there's going to be some bad blood. You're not an equal member. To use the Orwellian, some are more equal than others. Yep. I mean, that's a nightmare.
It is a nightmare. It's destructive. It's divisive.
Well, two questions I got to make sure I ask. Well, one is, law permits them, but in Quebec, that's a province of Canada, this doesn't happen, right?
That's right. The legislation in Quebec is stronger in prohibiting companies from discriminating against workers on the basis of the length of time that they have worked. And it's a great principle. The labor movement in Quebec fought for that, the same way they fought for anti-scab legislation. It's illegal in Quebec for a company that's on strike to use scabs. Cannot do it. Have not been able to do it since René Lévesque's government brought in anti-scab legislation in 1977. You know, so that's not talked about enough. But we need to honor what's been achieved there, and so that we can fight to get the same thing here.
I have to ask about that. I know you follow political matters too, as you should. Unions need, there are laws that can impact and very negative impact. The New Democratic Party, Ontario, have they put this at the, you know, they have a list of things they're going to do for the labor movement. Is this involved? Is this one of the things that they fight for?
I know that they have advocated for anti-scab legislation. I'm not aware of them highlighting the need for this kind of legislation on two-tier agreements, but I certainly think they should. I hope that I'm just not aware of it, and maybe they have it somewhere. But it should be really highly really highlighted in these days, because this is becoming such an incredible issue. I know that to give him credit, Jagmeet Singh was down on the picket line with the Nestle workers last week, and supporting their strike.
I'm glad you mentioned again that picket line's on Stirling. It's Stirling Road, I think, between Dundas and Bloor in the West End. It's a large Nestle's plant. It should be underlined, I would think, the tier business brings in other matters of gender and ethnicity too, which these are among the reasons that some people are leery of joining unions or supporting them is because they don't think they get equal treatment. And that's another bit of rust working away at this. I'm curious to get you to answer the question you posed. You said, how could this happen? Do you have an idea how it happened?
I do have an idea. And I think that it's related to the leadership of many unions in the labor movement in the United States and in Canada in particular, that have accepted the framework of capitalism and have accepted the logic of the need to give corporations things that they need and to believe that there's some common interest between workers and corporations. And if you believe that, really you're sunk, because instead of fighting wholeheartedly for the workers, you're making deals to try to keep the corporations happy in some way.
That really points up something I read all the time, which is, we're now led, our new president, Canada's new president, Joe Biden, and his prime minister, Trudeau, are starting to talk about competing. We have to compete. We have to defeat the foreigner, the Chinese. I mean, he's got everything going for him in terms of race hatred, et cetera. But you could see labor being sucked right into there.
Yes. Once the leaders of labor accept that they, that they have to cooperate or have common interests with corporations and with governments that really are beholden to corporations, they're not going to be able to fight for workers. And if you go back to the early days of establishment of industrial unions in North America, the best tradition of that labor movement was led by socialists and people who did not accept the logic of capitalism. And as a result, they were able to achieve a great deal for workers, including taking on racism and making sure that all workers felt that they were welcomed and equal in the labor movement. The organization of the auto industry, for example, would not have been possible without that strong commitment to fighting racism and uniting workers. And of course, as you pointed out, that's an important part of this idea of equality for all workers, equal pay, equal conditions. The sad reality of the labor movement is that during the Cold War, the McCarthy era, the leaders that believed in that commitment were tossed out, they were purged. And unions that refused to purge left-wing leaders were tossed out of the labor movement and raided. And that's the dirty secret that has to be uncovered and corrected if we're ever going to move forward. Somebody has to say, that was a mistake, and we're still paying for that mistake. And you can't cover it up, because we have to get back on the track of saying our principles have to be based on the working class, the interests of the working class. We can't compromise. Otherwise, we'll see more and more of what's happening to the workers at Nestle's and the second tier workers in the auto industry and in many other industries across the country.
Yeah, we're speaking to Tony Leah, political action chair at Local 222. I don't know if we can you speculate how widespread is this phenomenon through the labor movement, the tier system? Are there any unions that really stood up to it in Ontario, for example? Do we know?
I think that a lot of workers have fought, and some fought very hard. I'm not sure how many have been very successful. I know on the issue of pensions, which is another critical part of this division that's going on, getting rid of defined benefit pensions, which give workers some security for the future, and changing them to what they call defined contribution plans, which are really glorified RSPs without security. The postal workers made a very strong fight against that and have been successful so far. So there are some positive examples, but it needs a broader struggle to really be successful. There needs to be more solidarity and more a sense of the labor movement as a whole taking on these issues and fighting for them. One of the problems that the leadership of Unifor has created is that for their own reasons, they've withdrawn from the Canadian Labor Congress.
Yeah, they're out of the OFL.
They basically have pulled themselves out of the labor movement, weakened and divided the labor movement. So
that's an underreported story, by the way, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And because we see the effects of it. When a group of workers like these Nestle workers are willing to fight for a principle that everybody in the labor movement should support, their national union leadership isn't able to mobilize or doesn't seem to be able to mobilize the kind of support they should be getting from across the labor movement because they're at odds with the rest of the labor movement.
It's kind of hard to pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, you guys are so-and-so, you supported us, we support you, and we're in the CLC together. You did bad blood. You can't pick up that phone, or that he's liable to say, well, I talked to you about solidarity, but you didn't want to talk. This is poison.
It is poison.
It should be corrected. To me, it also points up, and you've done it very well in this interview, you know, we have to think about politics. We have to think about not only, you say, solidarity, workers across the various industries into one movement and with basically the one for all and all for one, et cetera, but also moving it up and saying, look, let's get laws that ban scabs. Let's get laws that ban the tier system. Unions shouldn't be standing around quietly while other workers, by the way, the unorganized, get treated this way. They get the boot all the time. I mean, we need an outlook that says, well, let's get some laws affecting every single worker, and they will all be protected, and they'll all get the proper pensions and health care and all those things. You can't just say, oh, you should join a union. That's not good enough. We should change the blasted laws and respect workers. You know, pandemic, by the way, underlines that. How it couldn't be more dramatic, could it?
No, you're right. And that's what motivated the rise of the labor movement, the industrial labor movement in the 1930s, was fighting for the working class and what they needed, what workers need in terms of wages and pensions and you know, some security of life and some recognition of the fact that they're the ones that are producing value, producing wealth, producing profits. And, you know, when we, you know, you asked how widespread this has become, we're at the point now where over 50% of workers in the Toronto, Greater Toronto Area are what are considered to be precarious workers, don't have full-time secure jobs, don't have pensions, don't have good benefits. Over 50% of workers. That's the condition that we have arrived at, which is very much like workers were facing the beginning of the 1930s.
That's a monopolist dream, is to have half the workforce in a desperate state.
That's right, yeah.
Was it Andrew Carnegie who said, oh, I'm not afraid of unions, I'll hire half the working class to beat up the other head.
Yep.
Sweet guy.
Might have been Jay Gould, but it was one of those billionaire SOBs.
The names are interchangeable.
Yep, they are.
Yeah.
And this company, Nestle's, which has 273,000 workers around the world, and those workers made for them last year in 2020, the year of the pandemic, they made for Nestle's $19 billion in profit. 19 billion in profit, which, you know, it's roughly $70,000 per worker. Every one of those workers was handing $70,000 in profit to the owners of Nestle Corporation, you know. But, oh, you know, they can't afford to pay workers equally for the work they do.
Well, the bosses have brains and personality, and the workers are just trying to hide from work. That's the point of view of the manufacturer. Now, it's a terrible story, but thank goodness we have, you know, the Nestle workers are on strike. It's Sterling Road, and it's Dundas and Port. People should go by, honk the horn, stop, talk, support.
Yeah, the workers there, you know, I was talking to some of them recently. They're getting a lot of support from the community. They've had support from Merritt Stiles, the member of the provincial parliament for the NDP. They've had support from the Parkdale community organization. Parkdale organizes, and a lot of people have been coming by, teachers, LCBO workers. So that's a good sign. And you're right, people should go down to the picket line and support them. We should be finding ways to get whatever organizations we belong to get out and support them. Because sooner or later, somebody has to take a stand. And then when they take a stand, they need to be supported so we can start to turn this around.
Well, that's exactly right. You went down, and as you know, when you engage with actual working people who are facing in battles of this kind, your understanding advances by leaps and bounds, and also ideas about how to solve it. I'm glad you mentioned the MPP, Merritt Stiles. Maybe we could persuade Merritt to take the banner and say, let's get rid of this tier system in Ontario. Let's join Quebec. They were committed to get it done, and they didn't throw it away when Ronald Reagan frowned at them. They said, no, we're going to keep it. I think it was Reagan. All of them frowned. Anyway, well, we've been talking to Tony Lea, Political Action, Chair of the Political Action Committee, Local 222. Tony, thanks very, very much. We're going to come back and update this story.
Great. I'd love to do that. Thanks.
Now, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And remember, there's going to be this meeting of the Meng, regarding Meng Wanzhou, the update on, the, on that case. And it's May 20, 7 p.m. Thursday. And you can attend by going tinurl, tinyurl.com/Meng panel. And we'll be back soon.